The Nine Attributes of the Buddha by Sayle Susila. Part 2, Chapter 1. Araham, the Worthy Accomplished One. According to the Path of Purification, there are five meanings of the word Arahant. First meaning, the destroyer of enemies, Kilesas. The Buddha is Araham. Araham is related to the Pali word Arahanta. Ari means enemy. Hatta means to kill or to destroy. Therefore, the meaning of Araham is killer or destroyer of the enemies. Based on compassion for all sentient beings and a tacit understanding of the law of karma, it is a Buddhist training rule to abstain from killing. With this in mind, the enemy here does not refer to an external force, but to the enemy within. Greed, aversion, ignorance. Jealousy, misery, regret. Conceit, wrong view, confusion. Delusion, shamelessness, and fearlessness of wrongdoing, etc. These dishonorable and unwholesome qualities are mental defilements because they afflict the mind and cause the mind to become contaminated and depraved. Therefore, mental defilements are our real enemies. When the Buddha attained arahantship, he simultaneously destroyed all his mental defilements, defilements that are harmful to oneself and to others. An arahant is thus completely pure in mind. Conversely, worldlings who are untaught in the Dhamma constantly produce mental defilements. In Pali, the untaught worldling is called putujana, as in putu kilesa janatiti putu janno, which means the producer of mental defilements. What does the producer of mental defilements mean? It points to those who have not yet eradicated mental defilements that arise when the six sense objects, color, sound, odor, flavor, touch, and mind objects, make contact with the six sense faculties, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind. An ordinary worldling does not have the required appropriate attention, yoniso manasikara, to see things as they really are, i.e., as impermanent, stressful, and not self. Consequently, passion, desire, and craving invade his or her mind when the sense objects are agreeable and pleasant. Unable to subdue the craving by way of mindfulness and wisdom, he or she has to act to satiate the craving. This action, most probably unwholesome, is called kama in the teaching of the Buddha. On the other hand, a worldling may feel repelled, disgusted, and dissatisfied when the sense objects are disagreeable and unpleasant. Unable to observe the negative emotion objectively by way of mindfulness, or unable to do away with the negative emotion with skillful means, he or she has to act physically or verbally to extinguish that fire of anger. Such unwholesome action or kama will then bring harm to oneself and others. Since our senses are open to impingements all the time, except when we fall asleep, our senses constantly come into contact with sense objects, causing the untaught worldling to instinctively produce or renew defilements. The list of mental defilements that are possible is long. Wrong view that there is an abiding self who sees, hears, smells, tastes, touches, and thinks. Rejection or aversion. Greed or craving for things seen, heard, sensed, and cognized. Jealousy. Lack of shame or fearlessness regarding unwholesome states of mind or actions such as greed, anger, conceit, and aversion. Lack of fear regarding the consequences of unwholesome karma done fraudulently. Arrogance, thinking highly of oneself or despising others. Obstinacy, inability to take in others' admonishments. Doubt about the working of karma. Domineering attitude. Restless, scattered state of mind. Cruelty, wishing to torture others. Covetousness, wishing others' property to become one's own, etc. Mental defilements not only bring us suffering in the present and in lives to come when the unwholesome karma bears its result, but they also hurt others. Under the influence of mental defilements, people fight with one another and, as during wartime, even kill and slaughter each other mercilessly. According to the law of karma, These actions have repercussions. When all the necessary conditions for the unwholesome or unskillful karma done by body, speech, and mind ripen, the doer will reap its fruit, earning an unpleasant rebirth into one of the four lower realms, hell, animal, hungry ghosts, or asuras, where there is no happiness at all. Coming back up from those unhappy realms to become human again is extremely difficult. The Buddha said, "The number of people reborn in the human world is like a pinch of dust taken from the tip of one's fingernail as compared with the dust of the great earth." Quote, "One day the Blessed One, picking up a little bit of dust with the tip of his fingernail, said to the monks, 'What do you think, monks? Which is greater, the little bit of dust I have picked up with the tip of my fingernail or the great earth?' 'The great earth is far greater, Lord. The little bit of dust the Blessed One has picked up with the tip of his fingernail is next to nothing. It doesn't even count.' In the same way, monks, few are the beings reborn among human beings. Far more are those reborn elsewhere. Thus, you should train yourself. You will live heedfully. That is how you should train yourselves." End quote. Samyutta Nikaya 20.2. When we understand that our mental defilements are the enemies that cause our and others' suffering, and that they may cast us into unhappy realms of existence in lives to come, we have no other recourse but to work hard to eradicate them, to destroy these enemies within ourselves, as the Arahant has done. When working with defilements, we should keep ourselves motivated with these words from the Dhammapada. Quote, "Irrigators regulate the rivers. Fletchers straighten the arrow shaft. Carpenters shape wood. And the wise control themselves." End quote. Dhammapada 80. In Bodh Gaya, on the night of his awakening, the Buddha sat in meditation under the Bodhi tree, ardent and alert, having completely destroyed all harmful mental defilements. With the sword of a Sotapanna, stream enterer, Sakadagamin, once returner, and Anagami, non-returner, and the Arahant path knowledge well established, he was referred to as the killer of the enemies, or an Arahant. Mental defilements are also the root cause of rebirth. When mental defilements are totally eradicated, then the link in the chain of birth and death is cut off, permanently disenabling any relinking to new birth. An Arahant is one who has totally eradicated all mental defilements and is liberated from the cycle of rebirth, completely liberated, with no possibility of any karmic potential in actions that follow. In other words, an Arahant's actions do not have karmic results. The faculties of an Arahant are pure and tranquil. An Arahant possesses right view, is fearless, worry-free, and equanimous, with a mind no longer agitated by the 8 worldly conditions of gain and loss, fame and dishonor, praise and blame, suffering and happiness. In the Dhammapada, the Buddha extolled the Arahant in the following verse, quote, "The fever of passion exists not for him who has completed the journey, who is sorrowless, wholly set free, and who has broken all ties. Inspiring indeed is that place where Arahants dwell, be it a village, a forest, a vale, or a hill." End quote. Dhammapada 90 and 98. Hence, Arahants are wise, worthy, and fit for reverence and offerings. Many of the Buddha's disciples, such as Venerable Sariputta and Venerable Mahakasapa, were Arahants free from the cycle of repeated existence. But how can we distinguish between the Buddha's awakening and the awakening attained by his disciples? A short answer is, although the eradication of the mental defilements is the same in both cases, behavioral tendencies in the present life and from past lives, vasana, may remain in Arahant disciples. A story about an Arahant named Pilindavacca clarifies this distinction. Because Pilindavacca had been born a Brahmin in his past 500 lives, he had a habit of addressing others in an offensive or derogatory way, calling them outcasts, vasala. This habit of his, however, did not carry aversion or conceit within it, because as an Arahant he had totally eradicated aversion and conceit. But overtly in social interactions, his behavior often came across as distasteful. It's just like with a bottle of wine. When we pour out the wine, the smell of the wine remains in the bottle. The arahantship of the Buddha, however, is like a bottle of water. When the water is poured out, no smell remains in the bottle. This is the difference between the quality of the Buddha's awakening and that of his arahant disciples, i.e., even though both have eradicated the mental defilements, the residue is different. Furthermore, when the Bodhisattva attained arahantship, he became fully enlightened and simultaneously attained omniscient knowledge or all-knowing knowledge, sabbanuttanana, and incomparable compassion, maha karuna. His arahant disciples did not possess the two latter qualities. The Buddha explained the difference between his arahantship and that of his disciples in the following excerpt from the suttas. Quote, "The Tathagata, bhikkhus, the arahant, the perfectly enlightened one, is the originator of the path unarisen before, the producer of the path unproduced before, the declarer of the path undeclared before. He is the knower of the path, the discoverer of the path, the one skilled in the path, and his disciples now dwell following that path and become possessed of it afterward. This, bhikkhus, is the distinction, the disparity, the difference between the Tathagata, the arahant, the perfectly self-enlightened one, and a bhikkhu liberated by wisdom." End quote. Samyutta Nikaya 22.58. Meaning 2. Worthy of offerings from gods and humans. In addition to what has been explained above, there are still four additional qualities of an arahant. The second definition is worthy of offerings. The Buddha is worthy of an offering from all beings, including Brahma and the gods of the 31 planes of existence. The offerings referred to here are those of food, robes, a dwelling place, lights, medicine, service, and reverence. When the Buddha was about to enter Parinibbana, the flowers of the sal trees in the area were blooming, even though it was not their flowering season, and the blossoms rained down upon the body of the Buddha. The celestial beings scattered sandalwood powder on the Buddha's body to honor the Tathagata. After the Parinibbana of the Buddha, the devoted king Ajatasattu of Rajagaha sent messengers to claim his share of the Buddha's relics, and when he obtained them, he prolonged the rites held in their honor until the arahants had to seek Sakka's aid to make the king take the relics away to Rajagaha. King Ajatasattu, in due respect, erected a stone stupa for the relics. 2 months afterwards, when the first council was held, King Ajatasattu generously gave the undertaking his royal patronage with all his power. During the Buddha's life, renowned kings and leaders made many offerings to him. For example, King Bimbisara of Magadha offered the Bamboo Grove Monastery for the Buddha's use. The wealthy merchant Anathapindika spent much of his fortune in gold coins to purchase Jetavana Park for the Buddha and his disciples. Migada's mother, Visakha, offered the Pubbarama Monastery to the Buddha. They did this to honor the Buddha, as the Buddha is worthy of reverence by beings in the three realms. Even though the Buddha has already passed on, in our practice we can recollect his incomparable attributes or virtues while we offer flowers, water, lit candles, and other items of a worship ceremony. From history, we learn that about 200 years after the death of the Buddha, there ruled a king by the name of Ashoka. He was the third monarch of the Indian Mauryan dynasty and one of the most exemplary rulers in world history. Having seen the bloodshed, massacre, and suffering of people during the Kalinga War, circa 265 BC, King Ashoka converted to Buddhism, along with the citizens of his kingdom. King Ashoka was the first king to accept Buddhism as a way of life rather than a religion, and he established a reign of virtue. He built many stupas, viharas, chaityas, pillars, and capital cities, and he strongly supported and expanded the process of inscription, writing, of rock edicts. He helped develop viharas, intellectual hubs, such as the two located in the cities of Nalanda and Taxila. The third council, held in Pataliputra, which was held under King Ashoka's patronage, is where the Buddhist Abhidhamma Pitaka was compiled. King Ashoka sent his own son and daughter, the arahants Venerable Mahinda and Sanghamitta, to the island of Ceylon, known as Sri Lanka today, and shortly thereafter, the entire population of the island became Buddhist. He also sent missionaries to countries as far away as Greece, Egypt, Myanmar, Thailand, and Laos. Even today, Buddhism is still the primary religion of many of these countries. Without King Ashoka's efforts to spread Buddhism to neighboring countries, the teachings of the Buddha would likely not have remained intact to this day. This was King Ashoka's greatest offering and gift to the Buddha. Meaning 3. The destroyer of the spokes of the wheel of rebirth. The third meaning of Arahant is one who cuts off or severs the spokes of the wheel of rebirth. The wheel of rebirth is explained by way of dependent origination. That is to say, rebirth and suffering come with certain causes and conditions, not without causes and conditions. There are 12 factors of dependent origination that form the wheel of rebirth. With ignorance as condition, karmic volitions come to be. With karmic volitions as condition, consciousness. With consciousness as condition, mind and matter. With mind and matter as condition, the six sense bases. With the six sense bases as condition, contact. With contact as condition, feeling. With feeling as condition, craving. With craving as condition, clinging. With clinging as condition, becoming. With becoming as condition, birth. With birth as condition come aging, sickness, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair, thus producing an endless cycle of suffering. These 12 factors of dependent origination form the wheel of rebirth. This cycle of birth and death is without beginning, although ignorance is mentioned first. Ignorance is the root cause, but not the beginning of the cycle of birth and death. Sustained by causes and conditions, which are ignorance and craving, the cycle of birth and death goes round and round, trapping all beings and thwarting them from becoming liberated. The Buddha once said, quote, "This law of dependent origination is indeed profound and appears profound. It is through not knowing, not understanding, not penetrating this truth that this generation has become entangled like a knotted string covered with blight, like grass and reeds, and cannot pass over the downfall, the woeful way, the sorrowful state, the cycle of birth and death." End quote. Samyutta Nikaya 12.60. Conscious existence arises through wholesome and unwholesome karmic volitions, performed based on three causes in the past: ignorance, not knowing the Four Noble Truths, craving for sensual pleasures and renewed existence, and clinging to the wrong view of self. Under the influence of ignorance, craving, and clinging in this life, karmic actions or becomings that are performed pave the way to the next rebirth. With birth as condition, aging, sickness, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair, and thus the whole mass of suffering arises. Under the Bodhi tree, the Buddha, by his own effort, stood firm on the base of striving and holding the axe of knowledge in his hand of faith, discovered the causes of rebirth and cut them off at their very root, thus ending the previously endless turning of the wheel of birth and death. With the destruction of these three fetters of ignorance, craving, and clinging, the other spokes of the wheel became unlinked, and the wheel was unable to turn anymore. Thus, the destroyer of the spokes is called the accomplished one, an arahant. Meaning 4, inaccessible by evil. The fourth meaning of arahant is inaccessible by any evil. One is accessible by evil only when the defilements remain intact in the mental stream. An arahant has completely destroyed the mental defilements, and once destroyed, they cannot rise again, just as a shriveled seed will no longer germinate. This means that defilements will never again have a foothold in an arahant's mind. Such a harmless person provides security and protection to the world. Meaning 5. Devoid or empty of evil deeds, even in secret. The fifth meaning of an arahant is the absence of evil undertakings in secret. Fools in the world flaunt their cleverness, yet do evil in secret. concealing their actions for fear of getting a bad reputation. The Buddha, having no attachment to his own being, nor to women for sex, nor to anything in the world, had no capacity to commit an evil deed in open or in secret. Where there is no reason to establish a worldly reputation, there are no secrets to be kept. In summary, we pay reverence to the Buddha as an arahant for the five reasons listed below. The Buddha is the destroyer of the enemies, worthy of offerings from gods and humans, the destroyer of the spokes of the wheel of rebirth, inaccessible by evil, and devoid or empty of evil deeds, even in secret. End of Part 2, Chapter 1.